Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. Every week on Connect the Dots, we discuss the connection between your personal health, your community's health, and our total health environment. For many years, I've been a reporter and a journalist covering health, food, and the environment. And in covering personal health for so many years, we were taught, to eat the right things, to do the right things, but that becomes less and less possible when we don't have the social policies that really support the environment and a healthy food supply, healthy water, and all the rest of it. So every week on Connect the Dots, I talk with different thought leaders, doctors, activists, scientists, and advocates about all of the different what affects our health. And on this week's show, I am very excited to be speaking with some return guests regularly feature here in order to really get a handle on one of the most important areas, which is protecting our food supply. And part of that is the whole movement, which is a global movement, to label GMOs here in the United States, and many countries in the world ban them, because, you know, the choices we make affect not only our food supply, but the food supply globally. So on today's show, we are going to host once again, so happy to be talking to Dave Murphy and Lisa Stocky. They are the co-founders and directors of Food Democracy Now, which has been one of the most successful outreach and advocacy groups, carrying our voices forward to the elected officials and state officials all around the country and at the national level, that we want to build a healthy food supply and free from harmful ingredients, genetically modified ingredients, and at the very least, we want to see labeling so that we can make a personal choice about what we want to consume. So welcome back to Connect the Dots, David and Lisa.
Hi, Allison. We're happy to be here. Thank you.
Hi, Allison. Great to be here again. How are you?
Great, really great. In the country today, and looking out at a gorgeous view as we speak, and you're being land and farm-oriented people, as you are, and you're really defenders of farmers and farming. I know you can appreciate that the city girl is in a happy moment in the country. So let's get talking.
Glad to hear it.
Since you last were on the show, there have been a number of developments on varied fronts. You were on just after there had been a passing in Connecticut of a law to label GMOs that is contingent upon other states passing similar laws. So could you, first of all, update our listeners as to what has happened since then and what is current and timely right now on the labeling front?
Well, thanks, Allison. Yeah, my gosh, it seems so long ago that that bill passed, and a lot of stuff has happened. Actually, a week after Connecticut passed a bill, Maine passed a bill to label genetically engineered foods with very similar language. The unfortunate thing with both Connecticut and Maine is they have trigger clauses, or, you know, basically provisions in them that don't allow them to go into effect immediately.
Mm-hmm.
In Connecticut's case, and this was basically because they knew that Montana was the biotech industry would sue them, so they're trying to protect their, you know, their annual budget. If Montana sues them, it'll cost them anywhere between $2 to $5 million in a lawsuit to go to court to defend their citizens' rights. So in Connecticut, it was five states with one state contiguous and a population of 20 million in the New England area, which essentially means that they needed to get New York State or Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, and New Jersey. And right now, right after Connecticut passed, Maine passed a bill with five contiguous states. The amazing thing is, you know, after Prop 37, a lot of people thought the GMO labeling movement was going to die because we narrowly lost. The real truth is that the American people were outraged because Prop 37 really exposed the dirty, you know, tactics of the opposition, of these chemical companies and junk food companies. And so 26 states have introduced legislation. This last week, you know, incredibly, Vermont passed the first no-strings-attached bill with a Senate vote of 28 in favor and 2 opposed. And again, Vermont's, you know, another state, New England state, that's worried about this lawsuit. They've lost, their attorney general's lost 3 major lawsuits in the past, and it's cost them between $2 to $5 million to defend them. So they're having a legal defense clause as a provision in that bill. But it's really exciting news for the American people. You know, this is a grassroots movement made of average everyday citizens, moms and dads, and you know, concerned farmers and just everyday people all over the country that are really outraged by how the chemical companies have stolen our basic democratic rights, especially when it comes to labeling of genetically engineered food. And wherever we go, people have been working together and rising up to fight this, to get GMO labeling bills passed in their state. So it's really remarkable. And we're on the cusp of potentially winning labeling here in the U.S.
And what's the status in New England right now? Are there any critical actions that people in the New England area can be taking now to kind of help this follow through and prevail?
Well, yeah, I'm glad you asked that. You know, we just sent out an alert yesterday for New York State. That bill seems to be kind of languishing in committee, and we need New Yorkers to get in touch with their rep to get it out of committee, right, and tell them that they want to have a, you know, labeling bill and pass that law there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just to follow up on Vermont is looking for a vote today. So in their house. So that's really exciting. That could happen in the next, you know, 2 or 3 hours here. So if you live in Vermont, you know, I know that if you live in Vermont, you're probably already pretty active on it. I know they've been hearing from their constituents, and there's strong, strong support there. Last week it passed 28-2 out of the Senate. So, but if you do live in Vermont, it doesn't hurt to let your House reps know that you support it. I know where you're at right now, Allison, in Massachusetts. You know,
mm-hmm.
there's a strong effort going there. And you know, that's in the New England states. We're also working in Colorado and Oregon on ballot initiatives. And Colorado's in the middle of gathering signatures for that. So that's really exciting, and they have a positive campaign going there as well.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's really remarkable because, as Dave mentioned, after what happened in Washington State, you know, everybody was basically prematurely saying that this movement, you know, would not survive that loss, even though it was an extremely narrow loss, you know, and which really showed that, you know, a significant, you know, near to a majority number of people in the state really want labeling in Washington. But now Oregon is getting into the mix in Colorado, so this is really an example of the voice of the people prevailing. Are there any updates on science? Because one of the things that has happened, which I have blogged about and written about when I blog on the Huffington Post and Alternet and elsewhere, is you know, the fact that there's scientific, so-called scientific divide created, where on the one side, you know, we have biotech scientists, you know, saying, oh, this is perfectly fine and we know it, and they're claiming that through, you know, many, many studies that have been funded by the Monsanto company, with other independent scientists really having a tough road even getting hold of seeds to do any other studies. And so through that they're claiming, well, the people are just ignorant, but the scientists say this, even though it's really funded industry biotech scientists. And one of the things that, you know, we see, for example, with BPA, which is bisphenol A, which is a chemical that is widely used in food cans, receipts, cash register receipts, baby sippy cups, plastic bottles. It's an extremely widely used chemical that's an endocrine disruptor, is that, you know, the chemists and the scientists who devise these kinds of things are not really human system biologists that are looking at, you know, what happens to fetal development, what happens to health, what happens to the immune system and other things. There's scientists and scientists, and some, you know, maybe specialties, a specialist at getting a seed to do something, but they may not really have looked into or may not really be knowledgeable about the human effects. And we've seen that with BPA, where the chemists all devised this thing, but no one looked at the fact that, you know, the actual chemical structure would act upon the hormonal system in all the detrimental ways that have now been discovered. So is there any update on the science? Because I know that also moves a lot more slowly than, you know, it's even slower than politics, in fact. any news there, or are we still, you know, kind of in that divide that we were last in on this?
You know, I would just say that there is mounting evidence that shows that there's potential significant harm. Listen, mm-hmm. when you look at GMOs, you know, this is funny. I spoke at Monsanto's annual shareholder meeting in January. I was asked to speak there by a friend of mine who's a fellow, you know, activist, but he's a Monsanto shareholder. And he mm-hmm. introduced a resolution to try to get to Monsanto to stop fighting us on labeling and to support mandatory labeling. Now, we realize that we're going into the lion's den, and it's very tough ask of them, but really what we want to do is make sure that they understand that we're not backing down as a movement. We're not afraid to engage them, you know, toe-to-toe anywhere, especially in their own house. If they want to contaminate our planet and our food supply mm-hmm. with their patented genes, we're going to fight them everywhere, and they need to realize that this is a popular movement of resistance, and this is a grassroots movement. So, you know, I had that opportunity to speak there, and I'll just say I wrote a letter, open letter to Monsanto shareholders, and it's interesting that you bring up the science, because actually there's literally every month there is a new study coming out that shows that, you know, their corresponding herbicide is Roundup, which is their best-selling weed killer on the planet, mm-hmm. in agriculture, and a lot of people spray it on their lawns. This is potentially having real health problems. I think there's been a number of studies in the last 2 years that link it to either, you know, in tissue cultures, you know, breast cancer. There was a study that just came out, or really not a study, but just kind of a sampling that took place that showed that Roundup was in, you know, breast milk. And so this is a toxic herbicide which accumulates on a plant because they're having to spray this. Roundup Ready crops have been out over 15 years, so they're having to spray more. There are super weeds that have been developed resistance to this weed killer, so they're having to spray more and more Roundup on the plants, and what happens is it accumulates, and so there's a residue, and we eat those foods, and that food, that residue will accumulate in our bodies. Well, the interesting thing is, not only that, there have been two studies recently that came out that showed that the FDA's 1992 claim of substantial equivalence is not true. And one was a 2013 peer-reviewed study in food chemistry that was basically titled Compositional Differences Found Between Soybeans from Different Agricultural Practices, meaning mm-hmm. organic, conventional, and GMO crops had basic nutritional differences in their composition, which is something the FDA has denied and said is impossible. And you know about this politically engineered loophole that our friend Michael Taylor at the FDA helped install, but I'd love to, there is new science that's out there that is showing this, that there really, there is a substantial difference between these crops. And I would just go back to this, you know, when I was at that Monsanto shareholder meeting, I did have this woman that's a former Monsanto employee ask me if GMOs, you know, this technology or Roundup could be causing, problems with her grandson's ADD. And I had to explain this to her in front of her, a lawyer from Monsanto who was charged with following me everywhere I went in the building. And I said, you know, listen, you know, it's a very complex set of science, but two things. One, that with a GMO seed, what do we know about these seeds? One of the seeds has been engineered to contain a toxin that kills insects. It's an insecticidal poison that's in every single cell of these plants. We eat those plants, and so we're ingesting that genetically engineered BT toxin, that poison. So a 2011 Canadian study showed that 93% of pregnant women had that BT toxin in their blood. And even worse is 80% of their children, unborn children, had that BT toxin in their cord blood. Well, then you follow that up with new studies that show there's an MIT professor. If you're in Massachusetts today, there's an MIT professor, Stephanie Seneff, that showed that Roundup has a very negative, harmful impact on beneficial microflora in our stomachs, which is something that helps our immune system. So there's new and emerging science that shows that, you know, Roundup, you know, and that study talked about Roundup and the loss of those beneficial microflora being linked to obesity and Parkinson's and even neurological problems like ADD. So there is some new and emerging science, but as you find, as you know this battle, the opposition denies this science at all costs. And this winter, they succeeded in forcing the Seralini study to be retracted. And that was a French study that showed that Roundup and GMOs increased incidence of tumors in rats, in lab rats.
You know, this is really interesting because I am currently actually working on an article on the microbiome, which is actually the new kind of scientific term for our expanded definition of the digestive tract and the bacterial environment within it. So, you know, where we used to talk about the digestive tract and probiotics and all of that kind of thing, actually there's been a there are ongoing discoveries, and where we thought that, you know, genes alone, that whatever was in your DNA was your destiny, and when they did the Human Genome Project, they thought, well, we'll characterize all the genes, and then we'll just, you know, have a handle on everything going on in the human being, and that was the whole big thing. They're going to develop all these drugs out of it and know who's at risk for this and that, whether or not we know how to treat it, and, you know, everybody was so exciting. Billions of dollars were spent that went on for decades. At the end of the day, it turns out that we had a very insubstantial number of genes compared to, you know, analogous to like the squirrel or something, that really obviously could not be performing, you know, the total control of our organism as had been hoped. Well, it now turns out that it's really the bacterial component of our bodies that are like near 95% of who we are in our own DNA is almost just like a small, much, it's only 5%, what we call I, is actually a much smaller percentage of who we are, and a much larger percentage is the bacterial microbial environment that we have within, and principally in the digestive tract. So it actually is a driver and governor of, you know, all kinds of things, as you mentioned, obesity, brain development, neurological development, immunity, protection from all kinds of illnesses, and the composition of that microbial environment has a lot more to do with our health condition on all levels than almost anything else, and that's what they're finding. And so that when you say that something comes in and interferes with a toxin that kind of shuts down that environment, you know, that environment is a question of balance. You want the good microbes to be in dominance, and you want a great variety and biodiversity of them, and you know, in order to keep the bad ones at bay. So when we are kind of fooling around with our ecological biodiversity and with the ecological diversity of the seeds and foods and plants that, you know, have traditionally been here, and kind of narrowing those options and taking them over through this genetically engineered food, it has both an outer effect on our biological, ecological diversity, but it also has an effect on our inner ecology that could be highly detrimental, because if it's killing the good microbes and or limiting their biodiversity, because it is, as you say, an insecticide, it in fact could really be creating a hospitable environment for a lot more harmful microbes and driving health problems. I mean, this is a hypothesis at this point, but given these groundbreaking discoveries, it's you know, it's really of concern, and it's not something to take lightly. So these are interesting developments.
Mm-hmm. I would just say, I think you're reminding me to take my probiotics this morning. And I think everyone listening should do that, because then gut health is very important as we're finding this out. I mean, this is really groundbreaking research about, you know, your gut health, your intestinal microflora, and how it changes your impact. And it's interesting that Monsanto never, they adhere to a 1950s like Lego style idea of how genes interact in the biosphere. You know, the interesting thing is it's, what about epigenetics? You know, I think that's another thing that we should really have a concern with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, which is how we, because this is all about not one little building block in the environment, but how it all interacts and interacts with that proportion of ourselves that is genetic, to turn on and off harmful or helpful genes within us, you know. So if it is having a harmful effect, it can also not only be contributing to the growth of harmful microbes and the limiting the diversity of the healthy good guys, but it can also be turning, you know, non-optimal genes, gene activity on and off, which is the epigenome. So, you know, there's this is not something where you kind of introduce a little something and say it's a nothing until you really have understood all of this. And this is like a whole other area for inquiry. And also, just to add to what you were saying, Dave, about the probiotics, I was speaking with someone from Europe yesterday, and apparently there are proposals before the European Health Commission to prohibit the use of the term probiotics on supplements in Europe. And and what is the thinking behind that? Well, the thinking behind that is to discourage and scare people away from using them, and they are instead saying they should be labeled bacteria. When we say probiotic, we're saying, you know, helpful toward the growth of optimal microbial organisms in your body. Of course, these are bacteria, but most people would be somewhat deterred to think, because of this lack of understanding, to, you know, of what the bacteria, that they are us, really. You know, some people would be deterred from taking probiotics, and that same initiative could be coming to the U.S. So, you know, getting this highlights the importance of the fact that how and who is making decisions about how foods and supplements and products and all the rest of it are labeled is a matter of, it's a social control issue, really. And so who should have the right to determine how these things are labeled? So it's not just, oh, a label, what's in a label. There's going to, you know, be a big tug and war over who has the right to have accurate labeling.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad that you brought up this issue, Allison, and I know that you and I have had a lot of discussions on it. It's something that I think is, you know, it's not given enough attention, you know, in our society. And I think that it's, you know, it's really a systemic problem. You bring up, you know, the labeling issue. I always think about, you know, our educational system as well and what mm-hmm. we're learning and understanding, you know, about biology. I also think about, you know, I'm a mom. I have four kids. Mm-hmm. And I've always done my best to keep antibiotics away from my children. I have one child who's never had any antibiotics. He's never needed it, you know, and mm-hmm. he's remarkably healthy, very, very healthy. So, you know, obviously that's anecdotal, but in looking just at, you know, at my life and my children and other people that I know, you know, that's really the foundation, you know, of our health. And, you know, someone said recently, you know, it's like, you know, we think about how it's important to have people in, you know, people in the food and agricultural movement pay attention to the importance of soil, healthy soil for our seeds, mm-hmm. you know, to think of, you know, our microflora like that. You know, that's where most of our immune system is. Mm-hmm. And how important that is to keep that healthy. When we're talking about, like, the work that we do with Food Democracy Now, mm-hmm. in trying to raise awareness on changing the food system, if you will, the industrial food system, it's important to understand that this is what the system is fostering. You know, for everything from, like, the subsidies of what crops, you know, are given subsidies, like high fructose corn syrup. That's where most of our sugar comes from, right? Sugar beets are genetically engineered. So we have all of this monoculturing, really, of sugar sources, you know. And when you look at, like, the work of Dr. Campbell in England, who Dr. Mercola has been very good about promoting her work, and I would also encourage people, if they're interested in this, to go to Mercola.com because they have some very good you know, products and programs for helping people to make their own cultures at home. But, you know, it's just really giving attention to this, you know, this fact and really this idea that sugar with our children is creating, you know, these mycotoxins inside of their gut. And they're finding a strong link between the sugar and the white flour and what it's doing to our microflora, just like you're saying, and connecting that with this epidemic of autism and ADD and, you know, these diseases that our children are dealing with and how they're starting up their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's because of this food system that has been allowed to really get out of control. It's
absolutely
a challenge for parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're supposed to fight it one by one as a parent and struggle with your child not to eat this and that when there isn't any shred of evidence in all of medical and nutritional science that doesn't completely agree to the same thing. Now, which is that the things that are causing the inflammation, the immune problems, the health problems, you know, the most widespread input that is harming us in that regard are these sweeteners. Artificial sweeteners are not good at all either. But you know, so we're actually subsidizing unhealthy food while making it a matter of personal responsibility for each family, to you know, try to control their child away from it and then blaming them if they can't do it. And yet the science is out there and the science is known. It wasn't known, back in the 50s. They were blaming whole milk and butter, you know, and other things,
yeah,
for the problem. But it's completely 100%. There's no deviation. There's no one who says, well, maybe a little isn't bad for you. Everyone knows it's no good. And also, as you point out, Lisa, that when it starts, when, you know, many of, you know, of people who are adults or heading into midlife or senior generations of people, through consuming the American diet or having all these, you know, kind of chronic conditions leading into very serious, potentially terminal health conditions of various kinds as they have moved through the life cycle, with eating these foods. But most, people did not begin, you know, unless it's anybody 25 and older, did not begin in life, with that toxic, as toxic a food supply as now is hitting these young children and the children that are coming along. And so how is their health going to be when they get to midlife, when they get to older years? Will they, you know, in fact, it's implicated in shortening the lifespan for the younger generation. So, you know, so like the illnesses that you're describing that families and parents are seeing today in their children, this is just the beginning. They're not like hitting age 40 and suddenly,
right,
you know, beginning to manifest a symptom, you know? It's tragic, really.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It really is tragic, and you know, and it's something that helped to, you know, drive and propel, you know, the work that I do. You know, in thinking about this next generation, it's alarming when you think about what this generation is just having to deal with that other generations, you know, in our modern history have never ever had to. When you think about how you know, mothers when they're pregnant, you know, most of the food that they have that's available to them, right, is the American diet. And so this is what our children are starting out with, you know, from the time they are conceived, you know, is like we're talking about the chemicals and the pesticides and the sugar, like we're talking about, the high fructose corn syrup, the GMOs, you know, all of it. I mean, it's really a toxic soup. And when people say it's an experiment, you know, of course, the other side is tempted to say, oh, that's just so radical, and this has never even caused as much of a headache, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, in my mind, you know, a person just really needs to know basic biology, you know, and also have some, I mean, I think common sense, you know, to say, well, you know, this pesticide or this chemical, you know, I don't really want that near me. Farmers are supposed to wear, you know, gloves and all kinds of things, right, when they spray it on, but yet it's okay. You know, apparently, you know, in the food that we're consuming, you know, they're finding alarming residues of Roundup, for example, you know, in our food. And these studies are starting to come out. And I have to say, I'm glad you brought up the science because if you were to ask me, and I spoke with some activists, you know, last month, some colleagues, and I said, listen, I said, the science is out. I said, we know that this is not good. We know that this has gotten way out of hand, you know, with the monoculturing, and it's made only possible by genetic engineering of our food crop. And, of course, most of it is genetically engineered to withstand this harmful chemical of Roundup, which, of course, Monsanto has always said is not harmful. We now know that it is, you know, to our environment, to our food supply, to the people. I told these activists, I said, the science is out. I said, you know, we're right and we've won. Mm-hmm. I said, in some ways, we need to quit dithering over it. We need to quit arguing over it. And mm-hmm. we just need to say no more now. Mm-hmm. You know, that's you know, the mother in me, and that's the activist in me that says it's time to say no more. Mm-hmm. We have to stop this, and we need to get back to growing healthy food. We don't need to grow ethanol anymore. There was a study that was just released, you know, that also says that, oh, wow, guess what? That's not as good for the environment as, you know, as what we were led to believe. A lot of us have known that for a long time, but, you know, my son, for example, in Iowa here a couple of days ago for Earth Day went to an ethanol plant, you know, and my son said to his classmates, he said, this isn't good for the environment, you know, what are we doing here? And so, you know, we've been really overly convinced, you know, by a media that's bought and owned by the same entities as these chemical companies, right, who are now mm-hmm. also growing our seed and our food. And that's what we really need to all wake up to, in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. You know, that's really, you know, a rational and really deeply felt call out to parents and other adults, you know, who care about children and future generations, you know, about the world and the health-harming environment that, you know, we have misunderstood and allowed to be created, and now there's something we can do about it. So we're going to talk more about what people can do and what other initiatives you guys are working on in the second half of the show. We're going to take our break now for station identification. We'll be back in just a few minutes. If you're enjoying this program with David Murphy and Lisa Stocky and me, Allison Rose Levy, please stay with us and come back for the second half of Connect the Dots, and we'll be talking more about some initiatives that you can participate in. Stay with us. Welcome back, listeners, to the second half of Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy. We have a terrific show today. If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Dave Murphy and Lisa Stocky, founders of Food Democracy Now. You can find them online, and it's a great source of all kinds of activism on behalf of protecting our food supply from GMOs, from defending farmers and protecting local and family farms, to everything concerning food, health, protecting the food supply of the next generations, and creating a food supply that's truly healthy for our children. They are at fooddemocracynow.org, and you can find more information and action links, and we'll be continuing the conversation now. If you just tuned in and have missed the first half of the show, you'll be able to find it later today and onward from there in the Connect the Dots archive here on PRN. If you've enjoyed the show, please share it with others on Facebook, Twitter, email, or whatever, and like us on iTunes. Every week we try to kind of bring you new opportunities for both information and advocacy. So back to our conversation with David and Lisa. You know, let's talk a little bit about, you know, we've talked about where labeling is nationwide in the first half of the show. We've talked about really the health and science and the policies that make for this very dangerous, adulteration of our food supply and these health risks for the next generation. In fact, they're not just risks. They're happening, sadly, as Lisa detailed for us. What are some of your other initiatives or other things that may be pending in this landscape that you'd like to, you know, have our listeners know about and maybe take action on?
Sure. Well, there's a number of, the state labeling initiatives are very important, and there's a number of other things that are kind of in support of that. One is in Jackson County, Oregon, there is an initiative to ban GMOs in that mm-hmm. county. because it's in the Rogue Valley, and that's an important seed production, organic seed production area. They have roughly between 50 to 80% of the country's organic chard seeds, and if they're and beets, and if they're contaminated, the problem is those seeds will be contaminated for life. Where they're, you know, because of the way Monsanto and biotech industry, they're the problem with gene flow. Those patented genes don't stay in the field where they're located. You know, sugar beets, I think the pollen can travel 2 to 4 miles, and that's really problematic for some of these organic farmers in that area. And Syngenta and Monsanto have donated $1 million against them. And this is a this is an issue that's going to go to the ballot in the middle, the second, third week of May. And it's really important for us to stand up for farmers that are trying to protect their livelihoods and organic seed integrity. And the other exciting campaign we launched 2 weeks ago, which is the Monsanto, a Divest Monsanto Now campaign. So a lot of people listening pay very close attention where their food comes from and how it's sourced. They go to the farmer's market, they shop, they buy local, and they know the farmer they're buying from, hopefully. Well, we wanted to take it to the next step. We want to change society at all levels. We really want to have a conversation on, you know, it's time to put your money where your mouth is. So we had some friends come to us, and we learned, you know, very surprisingly, that a lot of the top mutual fund holders in the country, which is Vanguard, Fidelity, and State Street, they own roughly 16% of Monsanto's shares. And we are asking our 700,000 members to call their, you know, financial advisors and see if they have a mutual fund or a retirement fund, a 401k plan, that, you know, and asking them to divest that, ask them to sell any mutual fund that they have that contains Monsanto stock. I mean, fundamentally, we believe that it's time to put your money where your mouth is. It's time for people, you know, to live socially responsible lives. And one of the ways that they can do that beyond just eating the right food is putting their money into socially responsible investment funds. And that is, really, if you want to find out more about that, you can go to our Facebook page at Food Rocks You Now on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also starting a community, Divest Monsanto Now, so people can update us on their stories, and we can kind of build a community and get ready for the march and the protest against Monsanto. Well, we've had some remarkable success already with hundreds of members telling us about their stories of calling Vanguard and Fidelity and saying, get my money out of here.
Mm-hmm. So people are going to actually be calling these mutual funds and say, you know, I don't want you investing in this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And we're the next phase of this, as you and I talked about briefly, is to, we're working with others, who are very familiar with the, you know, financial world and the investment world, helping us to find funds that are invested in what, you know, we would consider being more socially responsible. You know, those companies that are, they're operating, you know, with our future in mind, with our environment in mind. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think people are really starting, you know, to wake up to this fact, you know, that these other companies like your Exxons and your BPs and your Monsanto and Dow and Syngenta, you know, they have a difficult time operating, you know, if they don't have money to operate, right? And so, you know, we have to really, you know, wake up and say to ourselves, you know, where am I contributing? You know, we all have a part in this, and it's actually empowering, too, I think, for us to realize, you know, that, you know, our choices, our individual choices collectively, you know, do make a difference. So that's going to be the second phase here. So be looking for that, too.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, that's really important, because then we're really building the society we want rather than being divided. You know, our investment is in one place and our voice is in another, and we kind of can't afford to look at that. And you're setting up an important bridge and link for people to make that kind of choice. You know, so that's really fantastic, because I think that holds people back. You know, I've heard Bill McKibben speaking about divesting from gas and oil companies. For a couple of years, they've had this fantastic initiative. And now I think the Solutions Project is bringing in where you can invest in order to kind of move everything in the right direction. So, you know, not everyone is in that position, but for those who are, it's really important not to just kind of go along with the 1% layout of this is how we invest and this is what we invest in, but really, you know, to shift those choices. So I really salute that. And I hope, listeners, you'll go to the fooddemocracynow.org website and sign up so that you can get notifications about how to participate in that. Dave, any comments?
Yeah, I mean, you can go to fooddemocracynow.org. We have, we'll be putting a list of socially responsible funds on our site. We've been just trying to gather the, we want to, you know, give people top choices. We understand that there's going to be arguments, you know, within households of where to put their money and conversations of what the best is. But there's a number of good, you know, investment places out there. Trillium is one. I think it's located in Boston. It has really good funds. Dreyfus Funds is another one. There's a Green Cap Fund. So there's a number of good places, but we want to have a digest of those top places for people to go to. And I think it's really exciting. I mean, like, we have the opposition on the run. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things that a lot of people, you know, thought for years that this was too large of a, you know, these corporations like Monsanto and Syngenta and Bayer and Coke and Pepsi, and I think these companies are too powerful to take on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that with the tools that, you know, using the Internet, people can have rapid communication and rapid response to some of the problems here, and we can mobilize. You know, we're just a couple kids from Iowa with a laptop, and we're able to mobilize 700,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, interestingly enough, as we are fighting these battles and winning, the opposition, as you know, is working harder and harder to undermine our basic rights in Congress. And last week, a congressman from Kansas, Pompeo, basically introduced a bill, which is a grocery manufacturer's template. It's a bill that Monsanto and the Grocery Manufacturers Association came up with last year. And they finally found a sponsor who does not have an opponent in the fall election. His name is Pompeo from Kansas. He is sponsoring a bill that would basically make it illegal for states to introduce legislation for labeling and would so strip away state rights and would allow natural foods to be listed as genetically engineered. So natural foods would be able to, you know, they would, so your labeling, when you go to the grocery store and it says natural on that package, it would allow genetically engineered ingredients to be labeled natural, which, interestingly enough, that's been the case for 20 years anyway.
Mm.
There is no labeling or definition of natural at this point that precludes that.
Yeah, that's very important for people to know, Dave. That's a really important thing. There's such tremendous ignorance about that. I was in some kind of, you know, rest stop along the highway or something and got into a conversation with some food service people who were, you know, selling some food products. They were labeled natural. I think they had cheese in them that they were saying was natural. And, you know, so of course this jumped right out at me, and I was like, well, what is meant by natural? What do you mean by natural? You know, where is this coming from? And they were, and they actually told me, they said, and this is the kind of misinformation that can get out on the land, and you know, I think probably most listeners to this program would not be confused by this, but many people are. And so without the education that you're providing, this is how laws get passed that you know, kind of enforce really terrible things. These people told me, when it's natural, it means something. It means it was created by nature, they told me. And if it says organic, then it's just what the farmer did, and they could do anything. They told me. And I said, and they were, you know, they were not well informed, but they were very kindly and well meaning and everything like that. And I said, no, you know, actually you have it opposite, because there are very strict standards. You know, there's always efforts to weaken them, but there are stricter standards governing who can say that their food is organic and what that consists of, whereas the term natural is a free-for-all. And so, and yet, I think, I would bet even that some listeners to this show would be kind of like, oh, well, it says it's natural. That must be something halfway to organic. So, you know, this again, Dave and Lisa, drives home the importance of accuracy and integrity around the labeling issue. Otherwise, you know, with the seeds being transported and adoctorating the other seeds, and then the laws being changed and different terms being used to mask what's in something and, you know, to kind of hide the fact of what it contains. You're in a food free-for-all, and your choice about what food you can eat goes bye-bye.
Yes. You know, I'm so glad that you brought up this issue. This was one thing I wanted to be sure that we touched on today, was this idea around, like you're saying, organic and natural. And it's become, again, it gets back to what I was saying earlier about, you know, media and marketing, right?
Right.
And it's very unfortunate that that this has been allowed. You know, that like a, you know, Cheetos can be called natural, you know, like really. And of course it shows to, I think, kind of divert us as a society from what, you know, what we know to be natural, right? I mean, I don't think a Cheeto is probably natural. I don't think anything, I think it's hard for anything processed to really be called natural, in my opinion. You know, but more importantly, you know, if there are listeners out there that are really wanting to, avoid GMOs, right? Organic, mm-hmm. You know, it does not allow, you know, for food or ingredients to be grown from genetically engineered seed. So you're going to be avoiding a lot of that. You're going to be avoiding also, you know, chemicals. You're going to be avoiding, you know, harmful, you know, ingredients in general. And as you touched on, you know, there is an effort right now to weaken the standards, unfortunately, at the NOP. There is a National Organic Standards Board meeting that's coming up next week in San Antonio, Texas. Dave and I both plan on being there. And, you know, we're very concerned about this. You know, people that are longstanding members of the organic community, you know, farmers that practice organic standards, you know, in goodwill and in the spirit of what it was intended, you know, are deeply concerned. And this is an issue that I hope that all of your listeners pay attention to. You know, we do need to shine, you know, a bright light on this. It is important that we do protect organic standards. They do mean something. You know, I'm someone who's been an organic consumer for many years, you know, 25 years now. I'm 45. And it's always been very, very important for me to feed my family organic. And for the most part, most of my adulthood, I've had to travel 2 hours one way, you know, to find that good food for them. You know, because we live in a very cold climate here in Iowa, we don't always have access, you know, mostly we don't have access to, you know, fresh organically grown food. So I have to travel to do that. But that's how important it is to me. And it's very important to me, as I'm sure it is to a lot of your listeners, that when they are buying organic produce, organic foods of any sort, that they know that it can be trusted, you know, that it's something that they could give their family and feel good about. And, you know, the USDA, you know, they do regulate the NOP, the National Organic Program, and, you know, there is some conflict there. I'm not going to be, you know, shy about that. And so it is something that we need to be diligent about, that we need to keep a watchful eye on, and we do need to fight for. I think it's important.
That's really an important point. You know, it's one thing to say, I mean, on the one hand, you have a tax on organic saying, oh, it's elitist. Then on the other, you have, which means, you know, that it's more expensive, and it means that it's not accessible to everyone in our society as we would like it to be. And the reason for that is because of the pattern of food subsidies that you were referring to earlier, Lisa. And then on the other hand, there are people, well, I'll just eat organic, and they just trust it will always be there, and they maybe, you know, they weren't maybe there at the beginning, you know, for the two decades you describe of your own commitment to feeding your family organic foods as you raised your children, Lisa, was the same time period in which people were fighting to get the standards instated. And now that they are, we have to watch them and keep an eye on that. So it's not just like I made a choice for me, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, well, it's still the best system that we have, quite frankly, mm-hmm. You know. I mean, you know, in an ideal world, we would all have, you know, a farmer, you know, within 10 or 20 miles of us that grew their food organically, and we could all eat locally. I think, you know, that would be the ultimate situation for our human health and our environmental health. Mm-hmm. Reality is that that's not what most of us do. Most of us go to a grocery store. right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, just within the confines of, you know, what our reality is right now, what our food system is right now, organic certification, you know, is the best that we have within that food system. If you can buy from a farmer that's local, you know, that doesn't spray, that doesn't use GMOs, I mean, I tell people absolutely, you know, do that. I have a friend who, Dave and I have a friend, Will Allen, who's an organic farmer, mm-hmm. from Cedar Circle Farm in Vermont, who's been a tremendous champion of this Vermont labeling bill. I have to give him a shout out for that. And, you know, I saw him last month and he said, you know, Lisa, he said, you pay for organic once. You pay for it once. You know, you go to the organic farmer, they, you know, you purchase your food and you pay for it once. You know, with other food, you're paying the grocer, you're paying the middleman, you're paying the company, you're paying, you know, paying for it with your taxes, you know, through subsidies of a lot of those ingredients, you know. So
mm-hmm.
I thought that that was a good and interesting way for people to look at it, too, because we always say, oh, this other food is so much cheaper, but in reality it isn't. And then, of course, if you put into account, you know, your health and how you're feeling, I don't know how you really put a price on that. But if you could, and if you were taking into consideration medical bills or pharmaceuticals or whatever you're doing to maintain your health, mm-hmm. it would be so much better to put that money into investing in your food, in your diet, and in your environment mm-hmm. through buying from an organic farmer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really true. You know, in all of the areas that, you know, we cover here on the program, Connect the Dots, you know, what we frequently see is that there's, you know, a calculation of the upfront cost, but there's no calculation of the downstream cost. So when you mention, you know, the health bills, it's kind of like we don't do the research that connects the dots between these things that we're putting out there and people's health problems, and then we can't connect the dots to the actual price we're paying, and price both in terms of human suffering and also in terms of dollars and cents, and also in terms of the viability of our economy and our country. So we don't look at any of those prices. We just look at the profits that are kind of skimmed off the top by like cream. And, you know, these are really valid and really important points. So from here you're going on to protect, you know, it's kind of like it's not just about GMOs. You know, there's really quite a wide range of different concerns that I think both of you, Dave Murphy and Lisa Stocky of Food Democracy Now, really model in terms of the number of things that are all interacting when we say, and that all have to kind of work together, and that we all have to stand up to support for us to have a healthy food supply. And so, you know, that's one of the reasons that, you know, we've been in ongoing dialogue and you come back to the show over and over again, and I support and follow everything you do and everything, is because, you know, it just sounds like a cute catchphrase, connect the dots, but really all of what's going on for us is happening in these interconnected contexts that we belong to and participate in. And so really the whole purpose of this show is really exemplified by your work, which is connecting the dots to all of the different things that will, you know, that are part of the choice we are making as a society and as a globe as to whether we will have healthy food for ourselves and for future generations. And, you know, I hope we make the right choice, and I thank you both for all that you're doing to make that happen, really.
Yeah, well, thank you, Allison, and we send that right back to you, and you're exactly right, you know, with connecting the dots. I mean, you've got it, you know, right there. And that's what we all really need to learn, you know, in our own lives, whether it be we're talking about these physical things, you know, but we're all connected, right? You know, we're not separate. We're not separate from our environment. We're not separate from each other. You know, what each of our actions, you know, affects our future, and we're creating our future together. So, I think it's a beautiful thing, and we appreciate the time today. Thank you.
Yeah,
thanks,
thank you.
Great to be with you again.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you. And I also want to give a shout out to a mutual friend of both of ours, and the person who actually, when I said, well, who is the, you know, the good, you know, organization that's active in these arenas, and I asked someone who's a friend and mentor and leader in this area who I value, and that's Carolyn Raffensperger, and she, you know, sent me to you guys, and she is basically one of the key craftspeople of the precautionary principle,
yes.
which says, you know, we have to look at whether there's any risk of harm, not wait until it's traveled down line and kind of whomped us. And on so many of these fronts, so what you're all doing is really precautionary. You know, you're unfortunately the stuff has already entered the food system. I mean, we would rather have nipped it in the bud before it happened. But as you point out, with the dilution of standards, or as I mentioned, with this labeling problem in Europe around probiotics, there are many more things that are coming up every day that we need to be precautionary about, or, you know, they're just going to keep compounding the same bad decisions. And that is why, listeners, your voice is needed. Really needed. You're needed to take action. You're needed to invite other people to take action. You're needed to kind of check in on these topics every day. As you, you know, I know a lot of people who, as I do, you know, thank the earth for our food, or some people thank spirits or God for our food. We need to also show our thanks in these kind of tangible ways. So go to Food Democracy Now online and participate, and come back with us next week on Connect the Dots. We'll be back Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern, as we always are, on the Progressive Radio Network.